Hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I'm excited to introduce you to Dr. Carrie Jones. Say hello to Carrie, and it's time to learn all about hormones. Carrie.
Oh, my gosh. I am so excited. I can't contain myself.
So Carrie, I want to just introduce you a little bit better. She's an internationally recognized speaker, an educator on the topic of women's health and hormones. She graduated from National University of Natural Medicine in Portland, Oregon, and that's where she currently resides. And she did a two-year residency in women's health, hormones, and endocrinology. And she's board certified through the American Board of Naturopathic Endocrinology. And I love that. I'm a real big believer in naturopathic medicine. And I think it's so important for us to learn more about women and hormones. So welcome to the podcast. So my audience is 90% women, I'm sure, and yours probably the same. And I think one of my main goals in bringing you on the podcast today was just to help people start to understand the whole process of the perimenopause and menopause and how hormones affect the skin and everything else that we go through. So maybe can you tell us, start by telling us a little bit about exactly what is menopause?
Yes, I mean, menopause, I call it reverse puberty. And I think a lot of women listening would can identify with that because we remember the chaos of going into puberty. And now as we get into our 40s and into our 50s, our ovaries start to shut down. They stop making hormones like they once did. They stop ovulating all the time. And as a result, we start losing the abundance of hormones, particularly like estrogen or progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, like we once had. And that brings us with symptoms. And so women will start to say, what are these hot flashes? Why does my skin look like it's aging? Why have I gained weight? Why do my joints hurt, right? Why is my libido gone? What happened to my memory? I have all this brain fog. And that is the transitional period for women when we go from cycling regularly, reproductive, and move into sort of the ovarian part of us are starting to shut down. And so I joke all the time. I'm like, it's not always fair or fun, but it is a natural process of biology that women go through. So we just want to make it as smooth as possible so that we can help.
Do you think the age of menopause is changing? Is it getting to be younger, older, or is it just kind of a fixed constant throughout all time?
You know, that's a really great question. I think hormonal symptoms are getting younger. I absolutely have women in their 20s who report hot flashes, low libido, vaginal dryness, just like I have women in their 50s who report the same thing. But a woman in her 20s is not going through menopause. She's just struggling hormonally. Whereas I do think as women in their 40s and 50s, because of the reduction in their ovaries, I think that's where menopause is really happening. So I don't necessarily think I see menopause happening earlier, but I do see hormonal symptoms happening at a younger and younger age.
And is that related to, you know, diet and estrogens that are in milk and those kind of things, plastics, the poly, you know, phenols that we're exposed to?
They definitely play a huge role. And I don't think women realize this, that all those chemicals, they're in a field called endocrine disruptors. And our hormone system is known as the endocrine system, right? We have an immune system. We have a cardiovascular system, our heart system. And then we have an endocrine system. And so when you have chemicals that disrupt that system, they act like estrogen. And for a lot of women, we don't want excessive estrogen symptoms. We don't want to feel that way. And so in their 20s and teens and 20s and 30s, it definitely plays a big role because of all of our exposure and everything. You talk about this, so what we put on our skin, right? What we clean our house with, the candles we burn. It's like literally everything we have to be careful of.
Definitely. Definitely. I feel like menopause itself, like the term menopause has such bad connotations and it has this negative association with it. And it's almost like we need a new name for that whole thing. Like It needs to be like, you know, this is a time in your life when you're kind of at your prime in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And then you're hit with this, saddled with this old fashioned term of menopause. Like it should be like time. It's my woman on fire phase. It's like fire phase.
That's exactly. I know. Maybe fire phase, like vibrancy. Like we need
to
something.
Have a rebrand. Absolutely. We need a full rebrand. Perimenopause, menopause. It feels so geriatric when you say that. And I think it's part of
I agree.
It's this whole problem of women in their 50s. Like you can't even say you're 50 without feeling like you lose some relevance. Like Cindy Crawford told the world she was 50 and suddenly like she's not a relevant model anymore. You know, right. I mean,
I think women still stunningly
gorgeous, but women. And one of the problems with perimenopause, don't you think, is that women just don't even talk about it. Like Cindy Crawford, Madonna, people who are like Cher with Jane Fonda, like you never hear about that phase of women's lives. You hear about childbearing, you hear about careers.
Mm-hmm. And we are in school, right? In school, we learned about puberty, right? If we think way back, that's the one thing we learned about was what happens in puberty and maybe, you know, how not to have a baby. And so there was no going back to school to learn about perimenopause and menopause. And unless our older friends, our older, you know, aunts, our moms told us what was going to happen, a lot of women come to me in practice and go, I don't understand. What is this? What is this thing that's happening to me at 48? Like, oh, it's called perimenopause. They're like, I don't know what that is. I have no idea. Like, explain this to me. I've changed nothing in my life and yet everything has changed. And I agree. I think it needs a rebrand. So if you could talk to your marketing department about that, that'd be phenomenal. And two, I do think that more glamorous women who are doing well and handling it well, could talk about it to be like, look, this is a great time in life. This is like, yeah, it's a lot of transition, but you can come out even better than like a phoenix, like even better than before. It can be wonderful.
Like some kind of reverse cocooning where you go into like metamorphosis. It's another yes. phase of metamorphosis. Metamorphosis is even better than menopause, I would say. But what are the typical yes. changes that people might not realize are menopause symptoms that they actually might be experiencing? Like they're the typical hot flash things that you people know mm-hmm. stereotypically, but what are the other subtle things?
So one that I get asked a lot about changes in cycle. So women will suddenly skip their period and then they freak out that they're pregnant. They're like, it can't be possible. I cannot be in my 40s or 50s and pregnant. I'm like, we'll take a test, but I would imagine it's probably part of the menopausal. Sometimes you'll get a period that's spread out and sometimes they come closer together. So that is a common one. Another one is joint pain. Women will say, my shoulders hurt. I have frozen shoulder. My hips are aching. Now my knuckles, my fingers are starting to hurt, and that lack of estrogen, which is lubricating to all places in the body, will affect our joints. Brain fog is a big one. Women will go, I used to have an amazing memory, and now I have to write everything down. Why do I have to write everything down? Our skin, I have a lot of women that feel like they've aged overnight, and I'm sure you see this all the time in your clinic where they go, I used to have great skin and now I have this weird like acne that showed up in my 40s or 50s. I feel like I've aged. I feel my skin has lost its elasticity. Is their hormones change? And again, same with the hair. My hair is falling out. My hair is more brittle. My hair is dry. Mm-hmm. So it's again, when we rebrand, I would love to change. I wish some of these symptoms would go away as well.
Where is the technology? If men had to go through menopause, would we have not have like solved this problem like decades ago? Can you imagine like if the resources that they would have invested into this, like women's health in general kidding. Has fallen so far behind and has been so male driven and male focused that mm-hmm. I really think that nobody's even done any research on like, how do we reverse some of these very important symptoms that women are having? But I definitely agree with you that it's so important to start bringing up this conversation. For hair loss, is there anything in particular that you recommend? That's been epidemic over this pandemic that people are experiencing so much hair thinning, hair fall.
A lot of it, as you know, is cortisol. Cortisol, one, in the body, everyone's stressed out and has a lot more cortisol floating around. And two, unfortunately, right in our hair follicle, in our scalp, we can make cortisol. And so it can push us into the resting phase of hair growth and then the fallout phase. And so, believe it or not, one of the biggest things to help with hair is to work on your stress response, whether it's meditation, whether it's journaling, whether it's breath work, whatever you're doing, in addition to any type of scalp love, scalp support that you're adding in. And actually a big one that can be helpful because it reduces inflammation is an old time trick, but it's castor oil. And a lot of people think I'm crazy because castor oil, they're like, oh, my grandmother gave me that. I'm like, no, not orally. Don't swallow it. But rub it on the places where, or use it as a hair mask where you have, you're noticing some hair thinning. Let it sit in, let it soak in, and then wash it out. Now, castor oil is very thick. You have to be careful. It's not like a nice olive oil or something like that. But I have gotten great feedback from women who go, you know what? I've started doing like rubbing some castor oil into my temples or the top. And because it's known to be topically anti-inflammatory, they're like, I'm getting baby hairs. Like, fantastic. And work on your stress. And work wonderful. On your stress response. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a whole population of like some of my Middle Eastern women who use it for growing their lashes and their eyebrows. And it's actually phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that there's any mythology to that. I think it actually really helps. It's interesting that, like you said, it's a reverse puberty, like you're in puberty again, because during these estrogen changes, you can actually have more skin breakouts too. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what estrogen dropping levels does to the skin in general?
Yeah, it really affects our elasticity. As you know, it affects the way we handle inflammation. It affects our collagen. It affects our pores. It affects the bacteria that are naturally in our skin. Because it's shifting, it's not like a garden hose where the water is just sort of coming out at a steady state. It's on, it's off, it's high, it's low, it skips a couple days, it comes back again. And so as a result, our skin is going, what are you doing? Like, make up your mind. And when we couple that with the other hormones, some women also have low progesterone. Often have low progesterone. Other women, as they get close to menopause, their testosterone will go up temporarily. Testosterone can be problematic for acne. And our cortisol can affect our skin. And so when we have this sort of perfect storm of hormone changes, then it affects the barrier, the collagen, the elasticity, the immune system, the bacteria, and poof, we get like weird breakouts again when we haven't had breakouts in many, many years.
It's difficult because it's a battle between dryness, dry skin, thinning and atrophy of the skin and becoming more crepey. Mm-hmm. And then on the alternative, like the androgens giving you more sebum, more oil production, more plugged up, acne where you've never had acne and perioral acne lesions. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty challenging to treat, but are there any recommendations you have for skin improvements?
Definitely. I mean, just like you say, right? It's from the inside out. And so, even though the changes in menopause are happening naturally, they're going to happen. So evaluating how you're sleeping, what you're eating, what you're drinking, how you hold your phone. People are on their phone all the time and don't clean their phone. What you put on your skin, reading labels, whether it's your skin, your shampoo, your hair products. You're more sensitive, I feel, as you get into perimenopause and menopause. And so you may find that the same product you've always used is now going to react and you need to find a cleaner product. Everything from dry shampoo to your hairspray to your SPF to your lotion to whatever it is. And, working, like when I say with diet, now, especially in the pandemic, a lot of people are snacking more, they're work from home more, they're doing more sugar, they're having more alcohol, and all of those foods are just sort of feeding into that acne cycle. So I'm telling women, like, control what you can and then talk to your doctor about getting some hormone testing and let's evaluate and see where your hormones are at and see if we can help improve levels either naturally or with maybe even hormone replacement therapy if you're a candidate while you're doing all the lifestyle, dietary, sleep type improvements that you can control at home.
You talk a lot about Dutch testing, which is a specific kind of testing that women can do and order. Is that anything that's ever covered by insurance? And if people don't have access to Dutch testing and want to do it through their OB-GYN and medical insurance, what would you suggest?
So we can, you can order the test yourself. We do recommend that you try to go somebody who can help you interpret it. As a lab, Dutch cannot interpret it for you. But as long as we have what are called CPT codes, so the condition codes, we can give you a super bill. So you can submit to insurance, or if you have an HSA or something like that. Yeah, we get about a 40 to 60% reimbursement on insurance. Okay. We don't, the company doesn't bill insurance on your behalf, but if you submit a claim, then there is a good chance, depending on your insurance, that you will get some money back. So that makes it really helpful.
What is Dutch testing for people who don't know? I can't explain it.
Right. It is an acronym. Thankfully, it's not testing for Dutch heritage. Mm-hmm. It stands for dried urine test for comprehensive hormones. So it's a urine test that you do at home. It's essentially you urinate on 4, if not 5 pieces of filter paper throughout the day, let them dry, and then mail them back to the lab. So it's a really nice option if you don't like blood draws, if you are concerned to go to the lab, you know, if you'd rather do an at-home test and you need to understand what's going on with your hormones, it's a really great option.
And is that always the first step, or can people also just dive in by just starting with their OB-GYN and, you know, regular blood work?
Yeah, they can totally definitely start with their OB-GYN. They can definitely start with regular blood work, especially if they haven't had it in a long while. That coming into perimenopause or menopause is sort of a shock, or they're like, oh my gosh, I haven't had a checkup in a long time and now I'm going through all these symptoms. Let's check in and see what's going on. Because it's also important when you're going through perimenopause, menopause, like to look at the thyroid, right? Mm-hmm. To look at your glucose, to look at your cholesterol, to look at your iron levels, your B12 levels. I mean, there are definitely other markers that could go haywire, and I don't want you to miss them. And so yes, getting some blood work done would be a great option.
And I think even for younger women, like in the 20 to 30 year old age group, I have a lot of followers who are young in the TikTok age group. They suffer from like sometimes problems with too much estrogen and maybe need estrogen detoxification. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because they may also benefit from testing even at an early age.
They can, and they definitely, just in practice, and because I see thousands of tests in a week and I talk to doctors literally all over the world, I would agree with you. In the 20 to 30 range, that higher estrogen compared to progesterone tends to cause a lot of PMS and heavy periods and clots and fibroids, and it worsens endometriosis. And it can be a real problem for women. And so one of the reasons that estrogen can struggle is that it is supposed to go through sort of a 2 or 3 step process of detoxification. Primarily, it happens in the liver and in the intestines, but it can happen other places as well. And so it's really important that we do things like get enough water, get enough fiber, get enough green vegetables, particularly broccoli and kale and cauliflower, eating the rainbow, the colors in our fruits and our veggies. They provide us with the vitamins that are important to help sort of fuel, if you will, or co-nutrient how detoxification happens. And it's also important to look at like what other medications do you take? I mean, are you popping Tylenol all the time for chronic headaches? Like Tylenol is very harsh on the liver and can affect, you know, the way that you detoxify. Alcohol is a bully and alcohol pushes its way up to the front of the liver and can sort of really affect how you detoxify other things. And so, again, as we've been saying, like that whole like lifestyle, dietary choices, drink choices play a big role. But if hydration plays a big role, right, our intestinal tract, fiber plays a big role. And so the great thing about it, I tell women, I want them to know, is you don't have to live with this. It's definitely modifiable, which is nice.
How do you feel about women who want to take birth control pills well beyond menopause and like keep having cycles? And like there's some different theories about how to best deal with menopause. Some people say keep cycling, keep exposing your body to estrogens like it's always used to.
Right. Now, my concern with the birth control pill is it's designed for the younger woman. It's designed for a woman, right, in her teens and 20s. And so it's not really a period. It's what we call a withdrawal bleed. So you go on the hormone, which is, it's synthetic, and it tells your brain to tell the ovaries, don't make hormone, don't make estrogen and progesterone. I got this. I'll control it. And so the pill takes over, and then you get synthetic estrogen and progesterone for 3 weeks, and then you stop, and then you get a withdrawal bleed, and then you start over again. And so the women who are doing it years and years and years and consistently up into and past menopause, I do worry about a couple things. Well, a lot of things. There can be a lot of side effects with the birth control pill. I do worry about some of the breast cancer risk when it comes to all the synthetic hormones. And I also do worry about the fact that it's known that the birth control pill can lower testosterone. And so when women come in and they're menopausal and go, I have no libido. I don't know where it went. Like, right. Or I can't gain lean muscle. I feel like I'm becoming squishier. Where is my testosterone? And we know the birth control pill can lower testosterone. That those are kind of my two, like, I don't know. I feel there are better ways to manage. You can still get estrogen progesterone exposure that is still backed by research without doing the birth control pill until your 80s. Or, you know, as some of the theories say, for a long, long time.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's something to have a period while you're 60, 70 years old. Like, I'm not sure every woman needs that or wants that even.
Most women I talk to are like, I don't want it. I am happy to go through menopause and get rid of it. The exposure to hormone is different, is one thing. And like I said, you can do it in research-backed ways that doesn't include the birth control pill. You can use hormone replacement therapy that doesn't give you a period, that still is not synthetic, so to speak, and maybe have some of the other side effects that the birth control has on either mood or GI health or, you know, some other stuff.
So bioidentical hormones then is the flip side of that, which I think is also somewhat controversial. Are you a big advocate of doing bioidentical hormones, the pellets or the different variety of treatments?
So I am for the right woman. I definitely don't give them out like Oprah gives out cars. You know, I'm not like, you get hormones and you get hormones. Although I will say there are multiple hormones. So when women are like, I'm afraid of hormones, I don't like HRT, they usually mean estrogen. But remember, progesterone, DHEA, thyroid, testosterone, these are all hormones that we can help replace. It doesn't, you don't have to jump to estrogen as your first foray into hormones. But for the right woman who's really struggling with low risk, or we work with her risks, yes, I find that using estrogen in combination with progesterone can be life-changing for her. It can really improve her quality of life. And I think that's important. But again, it's not for every woman. I don't want women listening to think, you know, she just says to give it, like, hand it out like candy. I'm like, no.
Go sign up.
It is still a hormone. You still have to have a good workup. You still have to see your doctor. You still, you know, have to have, you know, some, like, breast health is important. And so we have to be careful.
And it's a little bit of maintenance and monitoring levels until you find kind of a stability there. Yeah. Does every woman need testosterone in order to, like, just age well in terms of muscle mass, bone density, libido?
So I think yes, because really? The number of women I've seen with low testosterone are really struggling. They really struggle with all the things you said. Well, testosterone's not the absolute only component of bone health or muscle or mood or libido. It is a big component. And so in fact, I was just consulting on a case earlier of a woman, she's 60. She had extremely low hormones, including testosterone and all the things you would think. She had poor bone health and she had a lot of brain fog and she had a lot of depression and she just had low energy and just everything was sort of falling apart for her and had been for years. So again, I don't rush to always replace testosterone in women, but I do think it's really important. I do think it gets overlooked. I do think testosterone gets all the street cred for men because testosterone is associated with men, and it's sort of forgotten that women, we need it too. We need some, a little, and so let's not forget that. So So I do like it. I do think that women in my experience feel better when they have at least a healthy sum testosterone as opposed to next to zero.
And when should we be taking our husbands in to get a check for, you know, male menopause?
As soon as possible, because they can be, moody too.
That starts like what, in the 40s, 20s, right. In the 20s, they start getting moody in their 20s.
That is true. So with men, it's kind of the same age. Men start to notice as they hit into their 40s that they either, if they're not careful, if they're not taking care of themselves, they're the same thing. They feel slower. They feel more tired. They feel less motivated. They notice that their libido is going down. They maybe start to get the belly bulge if they don't have it already. And they just think, oh, I'm in my 40s. It's a part of aging. And truth of the matter is their hormones can be just as affected as women's hormones can. Men can have cortisol issues. Men can have thyroid issues. Men can lack B12. Men can have testosterone issues. So I don't want them forgotten.
Yeah, definitely. And then I think there's some concern about like what foods we're eating. Are there specific foods that you think are best in order to reduce some of the symptoms of perimenopause? Or
I definitely, it in a grand look, advise that women be honest about the food that they're eating. So if they do notice in the last year that they've been like hitting the snacks hard, that they've been doing a lot of, you know, Uber Eats, like if they've been doing a lot of alcohol, if they've been doing a lot of soda and caffeine, sugar, that's helpful in the self-nourishing, right? Like you're just trying to get through a pandemic. It is not helpful for hormones. It is not helpful for how we get nutrients and how we use those nutrients in our body. And so I'm reminding women, you know, vegetables are important, right? And you know, you have to get enough protein and you know, that you should get, you know, a little or some fiber. You know, you should probably, if you've been eating a lot of sugar, having a lot of alcohol, subsiding on a lot of caffeinated drinks, and feel terrible, probably not in your best interest. So I at least start there with people. And then the other thing is to pay attention to what you're eating if it doesn't sit right with you. So I will get the feedback from women who go, I know I shouldn't have cheese, but I love cheese. Like it gives me gas and bloating, or, you know, it makes me break out, but I just can't help it. I love it so much. I'm like, you know, I get that. But every single time you eat it, it's like a little fire that your body has to deal with. And you're already going through perimenopause. So why are you adding more fuel to the fire? Can we cut that out for a while? Can you cut down even more? Just, can you be more mindful of it? You save it for special occasions. Just take the pressure off the body that's already going through so much change. And so I advocate, you know, try to eat the rainbow, try to get enough protein, you know, try to get good fats and just be mindful of everything else you're doing, the caffeine, the sugar, the alcohol, the foods that are probably triggering you, but you're eating them anyway.
The carbs, the sugars. Yeah. It's so challenging because it's like you have to become the Buddha. You have to give up all of these things. Like, okay, we're going to a celebration, a wedding or something. You want a glass of wine and a piece of cheese. And then you get to pay the price. And you're like, you save it for a special occasion, but then it still zings you. It's kind of sad.
It's not fair. Yeah. When I say this a lot, if ever given the chance and I get to be the, you know, goddess of the female body, I will change this because I don't think it's fair. I have so many women hit their 40s and 50s and say, I can't even enjoy a glass of wine anymore. Even a good glass of wine. I can't sleep. I get hot flashes. I feel kind of puffy the next day. My skin looks bad. Yeah. And it's whereas before in their 30s and their 20s, maybe they could enjoy a good glass of wine or whatever they were drinking. And I heard that over and over and over from women, and they're already struggling with sleep, and then alcohol on top of it often just, it ruins their sleep stages. And then is it worth it? You know, it has to be really worth it.
So you're saying we have to party in our 20s.
I did.
And if you missed out because you were in med school studying really hard, then oh well.
Yes.
You just have to be the Buddha now.
Yes, you got to be the Buddha now. It's just, you know, if you've been, it's just checking in with your body. Like what feels good, what feels right, what have you been doing? If you've been sleeping well, like I know that, I mean, personal experience, if I've been sleeping well and I have been managing my stress and exercising and taking care of myself and hydrating, I feel less repercussions if I choose to have that glass of wine than if I'm had a really awful week and a really poor sleep and, you know, I've been snacking like crazy, then that wine is going to hit me harder. And so I do pay attention to those things as well. And so the term is, you know, that it's getting a lot of press is biohacking, right? And I don't mean to say, I'm not encouraging to biohack your alcohol, but biohack everything. Like if what's going, what are you doing to have every day sort of be a really pretty good day from the inside out? And if it's been consistently pretty poor, then I think it's time to reevaluate everything from the food you eat to the stress you're under, to the relationships you're in, to your mindset. You know, I think it's perimenopause is a good time to reevaluate a lot of those things. Cause I think a lot of women going through perimenopause, they find their voice and they lose their, lose some of their filter. Right? Yeah. They have a lot less, you know, give a darn, and they just say it. And I'm like, okay, I want you to apply some of that to all areas of your life. And, you know, let's be the new you. It's in the rebrand. Let's be the new you.
That's true. So maybe that, you know, getting set on fire, like ignites something in you. Otherwise we're too busy doing what we're doing to even stop and think about any of this, like our health, like everything always takes backseat. You're in the prime of your career. Your kids are grown. You can have something to do outside of like the house. And then suddenly you're back to feeling all these symptoms. So it's our body's way, I guess, of grounding us a little bit. But I love that you focus a lot on heart health. My husband is an interventional cardiologist, and I think that that's so important too, because we always say that heart disease is the number one killer of women. And so what can we do in these ages of, you know, perimenopause, which I guess can be 40 and above, to help our heart?
Oh my gosh, so many things. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because the statistic, when women say to me, my biggest fear is breast cancer, my biggest fear is breast cancer, I'll say, I understand, 100% understand, but it's heart disease. Heart disease is the number one killer of women. And so it's really important to start now getting your blood work, see your primary care doctor and let's look at your cholesterol. Let's look at your glucose. Like, let's look at some of these heart markers. Let's check your blood pressure. When was the last time you checked your blood pressure? And it can be astounding for women. It's like, oh my gosh, like, gosh, I don't know, years, you know, I'm not actually sure. And then come to find out this whole time they've had hypertension, you know, high blood pressure, maybe pre-hypertension, and they're running in that gray area headed towards heart disease. And we don't want them to. So a lot of what you and I've been talking about applies to the heart, what you eat, the lifestyle you lead, how you sleep, your food choices, the stress that you're under, how you manage that stress, all of that, plays right into heart health. Absolutely.
And are you a big believer in vaginal health? Like, there's all these laser companies marketing us now in terms of like using devices to tighten, tone, and stimulate and rejuvenate, you know, for dryness, for more lubrication, for better elasticity down there. Do you think that any of that works? And have all those devices been taken off the market in terms of thermi, vaginal, high frequency, radio frequency treatments?
Such a good idea, or such a good question. I actually don't know. So for one, I'm a huge fan, big fan of vaginal health, because it is one of the things to get worse in perimenopause and menopause, right? Women start to experience dryness, sex becomes painful. Maybe they're prone to more infections, because when you had a lot of hormone, it was keeping your vaginal health happy. And as we lose hormones, then it becomes a little bit more unhappy, and we're more prone to infection. And so if any of those devices helped with any of that, if it did improve elasticity, it reduced pain, it brought back lubrication, it improved orgasm, right? Women notice as they get older, they're less sensitive in the vaginal area. And so they struggle to achieve orgasm like they used to. And it's even harder for the woman who struggled to achieve orgasm in the first place. And then she went through, now she's in perimenopause or menopause. So the actual device itself, I don't know that much on the devices, but if they are going to help, you know, bring her mojo back and improve orgasm and all that, then I'm all for it. whatever it takes. Vaginal health should not be neglected. And so, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you use them at your practice? Do you have them at your practice?
We have radio frequency for the face and the body, and definitely they brought devices. Some of the companies came in and showed us some devices that were useful for vaginal probe, or even something where you, like a toilet seat device that you sat on it and it stimulated you internally. And it's also fascinating, but then we hear reports of the FDA taking many of these things off the market, and that we're not sure if the efficacy is really there yet. But I think that is definitely one of the next phases. Like, we maintain our faces, we look good, we feel internally like we're 30 years old, but then, you know, the body does start to change and everything needs a little bit of maintenance. So I think that's definitely coming. In terms of supplements, this is probably your most popular question, and I know that everybody is dying. Like, the questions that I got sent to me to answer during this podcast were all about, like, what can I take? What supplements can I take? What is the quick fix and the magical pill that's going to stop my hot flashes, or what do I do? So do you have some favorites or any advice or about how to think about that?
Yeah, I do. So obviously, you know, Dr. K and I are doctors, but we're not necessarily your doctors. So this is more education than medical advice. Talk to your doctor about supplements. But, you know, one of the big things, which has been talked a lot about in the last year, are things such as vitamin D, right? Vitamin D is a hormone. It plays a big role in the body, a huge role in the body. Mm-hmm. So many people are deficient in vitamin D. I find as women head into perimenopause and menopause, that they're often very deficient in vitamin D. So getting that checked. As far as like hot flashes and just feeling good energy, I find antioxidants are really helpful. So think about your vitamin C, your vitamin E, your glutathione, your CoQ10, like an antioxidant blend, or foods that are high in these antioxidants. I mentioned the fires earlier. So in our body, we have these little fires all the time from various things. And what puts out the fires, essentially our fire trucks, are antioxidants. And so that's why it's so important to either get them through food, or, you know, maybe you can add in a little extra with supplements when you talk to your doctor. And then there's some research to show vitamin E has actually been helpful for hot flashes. And so that may be a win-win for those who are taking vitamin E. The popular one for hot flashes, of course, is black cohosh, which is known as simisifuga. The research is very mixed on whether or not it's effective. I do find if you go with a quality company, like an actual herbal company, as opposed to maybe a big box brand that has no idea what it's doing, that then I find it to be more efficacious, that it actually does work. So some of the, like at the natural food stores, or maybe Whole Foods, or like true, where they're carrying true or herbal-based companies, that could be really helpful. Mm-hmm. The other things I find helpful, and a lot of people are talking about them or have taken them, are what are called adaptogens. So adaptogens are herbs that help you adapt. Right? They help your systems adapt. They help your adrenals adapt. We call it the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal system, HPA system. But as women progress into perimenopause and menopause, and we are losing our ovaries, then the other systems, glands in our body are having to pick up the slack. And so a common one we hear about are like ashwagandha. Ashwagandha is a common adaptogen. Cordyceps, rhodiola, some of the mushrooms, reishi mushroom, like cordyceps also falls in there. They can be helpful at just improving resilience, I guess would be a nice way to say it. And then omegas, I think the omega-3s, we have so many of the omega-6s in our in our life with the unhealthy oils and, you know, fried foods and what have you. But the omega-3, the fatty acids from like the fish, the deep cold water fish, very anti-inflammatory, heart healthy, could be helpful to the skin and reducing inflammation. And so I know I mentioned a lot of supplements, but there is some really interesting research on a lot of these supplements. And so definitely talking with your doctor about what's going on with you and what might be the best sort of way to go when it comes to supplements.
Mm-hmm. I've heard you mention about magnesium before too.
Oh, magnesium is my favorite.
Tell me why.
Yes, I didn't mention magnesium only because I think I was thinking more like very specific with menopause, although magnesium can be specific with menopause. Magnesium is involved in over, depending what you read, 300, over 300, over 600 enzymatic reactions in the body, which means when your body needs to get from point A to point B, magnesium is the little co-nutrient that helps it do so 300 times over, which is amazing. It's very relaxing. It relaxes, you know, muscles. It can be helpful for the heart. It can be helpful for stress. It can be helpful for the brain. I mean, it does so much in the body. And so it reduces pain. It reduces inflammation, depending where the little enzymatic process is. And so magnesium is by far my favorite mineral. It's a mineral. And we can lose minerals. Sometimes our water filters are so strong. A lot of people have great water filters at home, but then they've stripped all the minerals out and they're not getting minerals back in. The exercise, sweating, like we can sweat out our minerals and if we don't replenish them. And so that's why I love magnesium. I tend to get headaches and magnesium can be really helpful. Sometimes I can feel if I'm really depleted, I can feel like I have restless leg. Mm-hmm. Magnesium takes it. It helps with sleep. It's very calming. The glycinate, magnesium glycinate is a form that's generally very calming. And so that's why I love it because it's so multifunctional in the body.
And Botox for headaches too.
I'm sorry.
And you can do Botox for your headaches too, in case if you're getting severe
headaches. I do. I get the glabella right there. So yes.
You do. You have beautiful skin.
Botox. Definitely helps.
Well, that sounds like a handful of pills to take every day. It's frankly hard to take that many. Like I can have weeks where I'm like really into the supplements and I'll be such a good girl. And then I'll have weeks where I'm like, just screw it. I don't even know what I want. I don't want anything. I'm going to bed.
Yeah. That's why I definitely recommend, that's why I said, it's a lot that I talked about, but I also talked about it very generally and that they don't apply to everybody. Not everybody's going to need, you know, all 10 things that I suggested by any stretch. You know,
those are helpful.
They are just generally across the board for various things. They can be helpful. If you're not having hot flashes, then, you know, don't talk to your practitioner about black cohosh. But if you are having a lot of inflammation, like maybe talk to them about fish oil or magnesium or, you know, some of the antioxidants. If you haven't had your vitamin D checked in a while, have your vitamin D checked and let's see if you need it. So it can be very personalized.
It's so interesting what you said about drinking wine and the pandemic. It has been definitely epidemic that people have relied on alcohol more. Mm-hmm. And is it really that fast of a process? Like, you know, you have a glass of wine and you have hot flashes that night, or is it generally a cumulative effect?
No, it can literally be that. It can be within minutes. I mean, I've had women older than me say to me, I have a glass of wine. And within a couple minutes, I am like fanning myself or taking off my jacket. And others will say it'll take a couple hours and they'll note in the middle of the night, they'll get night sweats because of alcohol. So it can be that quick, not for all women, but because I've had the feedback enough from women who said, it's immediate. I can't do it anymore. So,
and even the dry farm wines or the low sugar wines or all these organically farmed wines, there isn't any alternative. Not that I'm a huge wine drinker, but it's just such a common thing. And it's such a shame because women do have a lot of pent up anxiety and stress. And sometimes it does just help you to relax.
Sometimes I know. And social, right? Or it's a celebration, somebody's wedding or graduation or something wonderful.
Or it just pairs with a good meal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The dry farm wines, so the organic biodynamic wines are definitely the way to go if you're going to drink wine. Look for organic. Look for these low sugar, no sugar added type wines. It is still alcohol though. So for some people, it doesn't matter what it is, they react. And for others, having the organic, no sugar, biodynamic type is like, that was the most helpful. Like now they can enjoy a glass of wine again when they want to. And the same goes for hard alcohol. I have women tell me, you know, I only do tequila or I only do vodka, but I have to do like a higher end cleaner brand or an organic brand. Otherwise I react, I get hot flashes or my skin breaks out or I get a headache or I feel very tired and puffy the next day. And so your quality counts, just like with absolutely everything in life, quality counts.
That's so true. You wonder evolutionarily, like what possible benefit could it bring to women to have hot flashes at this age? Do you think, can you postulate of anything evolutionarily that would have helped us survive better being warmer? I can't imagine.
I guess unless you're from the north.
in the cold environments.
In the really cold environments. The hot flash situation is a lot of, you have a temperature sensor in your brain, in a part of your brain called the hypothalamus, and it's very easily thrown off by stress in particular. There's a hormone called norepinephrine, which is also known as noradrenaline. And so one of the questions I'll ask my women when they say, gosh, I didn't have any hot flashes for a while and now they're back, I'll go, how's your stress been? Every time they'll go, oh, it's been terrible. It's been terrible. And it's because that shifting and how they work with norepinephrine can play a role. There are other reasons, but that can be one role. So I'm like, okay, back to the basics. Let's do supplements for stress and let's get your stress under control and let's get you sleeping again and all of those things.
Well, it's a wonderful field you've chosen and a really big help to your fellow woman. And I hope that I can help you to change the conversation because I think that it's such a suppressed and hidden topic. And I just realized that the more we bring it to the surface and women talk about it, the better off we'll all be. It's just like how women have period shame when they're in their early teens and then they have, you know, getting all kinds of controversy about birth control. And then it's, you know, at every phase of our lives, there's some controversy, but it's a really hidden and silent topic. And I think that as we get to be a society where women are more and more relevant and more powerful in their 40s and 50s and beyond, we have to really address this fact that this women's bodies differ and we need help with some of these issues. So I think it's up to us to teach our patients all about this. So for my patients, definitely to think about every, you know, as your estrogens fall, it's so important to stimulate your skin. And I recommend Retin-A at nighttime, which is high dose vitamin A derivative to help the skin to turn over and exfoliate and develop more plumpness and collagen production. And then hyaluronic acid to draw water content in without having oily breakouts. And then treatments like peels and microneedling and lasers, because these things all stimulate collagen production. Because if we don't, our skin gets dermal atrophy, thinning, and changes where you get more tissue paper like skin, which is not going to be vibrant and healthy for the rest of your life. So I think it's a fascinating time. And luckily we have technology and aesthetics where we have bioregenerative abilities. Now we have biostimulators like Sculptra, which is polylactic acid, or hyperdiluted Radiesse, which is a product that both of these, when you inject them in the body, the neck, the decollete, where the skin starts to change, you get brand new collagen production. So that's kind of super exciting for me. And I want to encourage women to think about like maintaining not just your face, but your body, and not just your body, but your innards and your hormones. And kind of like you said, biohack every phase of your life.
Right? That is the truth. And I'm a huge, huge fan of aesthetics. I'm all about microderm and peels. And, you know, I said earlier, Botox, and I did put my hyaluronic acid on this morning. And so yes, it's important. It's important.
It really is to like come into this next section of your life with like, you know, all the tools to succeed actually and enjoy it, to really enjoy being in your prime. So where can people find you? And have you come out with your own supplement line yet? You really need to.
I know. One thing at a time. You can find me on Instagram. That's where I hang out. I am at dr.carriejones. And I do all education just like here. And I try to make it really digestible and bite-sized and actionable just to teach you everything about hormones, because I think it's really important that women understand their bodies.
So important. I found you from an Instagram post about estrogen detox, which I forwarded to my three daughters. And I thought it was very understandable. And it's so complex. It's like something we learned in med school and stirred up all these med school memories. But you made it very easy to understand. So thank you for that. And are you on TikTok too? Or
anything? I am not on TikTok. No, I have not breached into TikTok yet. But are you on TikTok?
Yes, we do a lot of TikTok. Oh.
My gosh. I just watch you on Instagram. So whatever you post, whatever you upload on Instagram, that's what I follow.
Well, I can't wait to meet you sometime in person. We'd love to have you come visit when you're in LA.
Absolutely. Sometime.
I hope you guys will all go check out Dr. Carrie Jones, an amazing amount of information in a short time period. And everyone needs to look into getting their hormones checked, taking care of their heart, their diet, and all the things we do as women. We never take care of ourselves. Time we take care of each other a little bit and teach each other like our little tips and tricks about this hard road of aging. So
100%, I agree.
That's it for now, guys. You can find me on my Instagram doing amazing things with people's faces. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y. And our website is the same. It's beautybydrk.com. And you can find my skincare there, which I love my Diamond Line Refine, which is our high dose retinol, and lots of products to stimulate collagen production. Carrie, I'm going to send you a little goodie bag with some really awesome skincare to try.
I would be honored. Love it.
That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful. Stay on fire. Bye for now.